This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Let the hiring begin.
Did we finally turn the corner on jobs last month?
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bob Moon in for Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for downloading our podcast from marketplace.org. We made it to Friday,
yes,
March
4th.
Coming up, if all goes as planned, Mexican trucks will soon be headed north. And there are a lot of trucks and cars heading all over Greece, but they're not paying at the toll booth. We'll tell you why.
Later, bikers are all revved up about being able to buy a motorcycle on Sunday. We'll tell you where sales have historically been banned on motorcycles on the day of rest. Those stories ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update from Marketplace.org.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
We start today in the job sector. The nation's economy created 192,000 jobs last month, and the unemployment rate dropped slightly to 8.9%. It's down below 9% now. Maybe, just maybe, it's a sign the labor market is showing a little oomph.
Let's try and make a little sense out of the latest economic report, the employment report, with Jill Schlesinger, editor-at-large at CBS Money Watch. She's with us from New York, as she is every Friday morning. Morning, Jill.
Good morning.
I see these numbers and I'm thinking, yes, great jobs report, but what do you think?
Well, I think yes, but a little less enthusiasm. The reason is that the January report was quite weak. Now, it was revised higher, so we added 63,000 jobs in January, added to this 192,000. That gives us an average of about 127,500 for the first 2 months of the year. That's only slightly higher than what we need to keep pace with new job entrants into the workforce.
Now, looking a little deeper into this report, Jill, I see a loss of 30,000 government jobs. What's happening there?
Well, you know, as these states and municipalities are under pressure, they are cutting their workforces. So this is a disturbing trend. But on the other hand, the good news is that we saw over 200,000 private sector jobs added. So maybe this is a little bit of good timing that the private sector can pick up just as the government sector is scaling back a bit.
Are we going to see that continue, do you think, that little equation and also just these overall good jobs reports?
Yes, I think that the two trends should continue. But I still want to remember, we have 13.7 unemployed persons in this country, another 8.3 million who are working part-time, who want full-time help, and 6 million people who've been out of work for more than 6 months. We have a long way to go.
All right. Jill Schlesinger at CBS Money Watch. Jill, thanks.
Great to be with you.
Let's go a little deeper into all this with Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. Chris, no doubt this reflects improvement, but just how impressed should we be, do you think?
Well, thanks, Bob. I tell you what, I think the most important thing to do looking at this report is to put it into the perspective of what happened in January. The weather, especially storms in the southeast, depressed hiring. When you look at the 2 months together, what you see is an average private sector job growth of 135,000. Unfortunately, about the same as the average last year.
So maybe not as impressive as it looks at first glance. We just heard Nancy tell us that even as businesses were hiring in the private sector, government cutbacks were taking jobs away. Is that going to create sort of a two steps forward, one step back kind of drag here?
Well, call it three steps forward, one step back. We lost 30,000 jobs at the state and local level. I expect we're going to see similar losses going forward. What's going on is that state and local governments assumed a normal recovery in tax revenues. It's not happening because we don't have the kind of private sector job growth you would normally get in a recovery. So if we can, in fact, accelerate to faster job growth over the course of this year, that burden will lighten. But for now, those layoffs, the beginning of a trend, I think, that's going to last for a while.
quickly, you see much chance we'll have this report leading to Chairman Bernanke at the Federal Reserve considering tightening up its easy money policy?
I don't think so. You know, Bernanke himself said earlier this week, we lost 8.5 million jobs during the recession. Since the end of the recession, we've only gained back about 1 million. For now, the Fed's going to do everything it can to encourage the strongest possible employment growth and, of course, economic growth.
Economist Chris Lowe at FTN Financial, thanks.
You're welcome.
President Obama and Mexico's President Felipe Calderon appear to have reached an agreement that will allow Mexican trucks on American highways. The deal puts to rest a decades-old dispute between the two countries. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is with us from Washington with the details. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
So what does this agreement say?
Well, it would require that Mexican truckers pass drug and safety tests before they're certified to drive in the U.S. And that's designed to answer complaints from American unions that Mexican trucks are unsafe. George Grayson is a political scientist specializing in Mexico at the College of William and Mary, and I spoke with him. He says Mexico has already been working on the safety of its rigs.
The rigs are much safer now, and the drivers more experienced. And there, in fact, have been some studies to indicate that Mexican trucks are actually safer than those that ply the roadways of Canada and the United States.
But weren't Mexican trucks, Nancy, already allowed into the U.S. under NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement?
Good memory, Steve. They were. But the U.S. kept them out anyway, partly because of pressure from union drivers. They said their jobs would be threatened by Mexican rigs. Then there were the allegations about safety. Now, Mexico retaliated by increasing tariffs on dozens of American products headed to Mexico. Remember, this is a tentative agreement pending congressional approval. The deal is expected to land on Capitol Hill later this month or in April. And Mexico says if the deal is approved, it will gradually end the tariffs, and they would be dropped entirely when the first Mexican rig was certified for U.S. roads.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Nancy, thanks.
You're welcome.
Some good news for holders of Bank of America credit cards. More than 1 million customers will see their interest rates drop. As Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith reports, it's the beginning of what could be a domino effect because of regulation that was passed in Congress.
The credit card interest rate cuts are part of the CARD Act Congress passed in 2009. Bill Hardikoff is the CEO of LowCards.com.
People had their APRs go skyrocketing in a number of cases, and it was unfair, and that's why Congress acted.
The CARD Act ruled banks needed to reevaluate any interest rate hikes imposed in 2009 and much of 2010. The banks have a lot of leeway in how they reevaluate, but many customers could see their rates drop significantly. Banking analyst Bart Narder with Celent says banks want to lend money again and are starting to raise credit limits and lower interest rates to encourage borrowing.
Banks are seeing delinquency rates drop, and that makes them more confident about extending more credit.
Card companies also don't want to lose good customers, says Hardikoff with LowCards.com.
The credit card industry is still a very competitive industry. Issuers want to hold on to their very best customers.
Hardikoff expects other banks will follow suit and millions more cardholders will see their interest rates go down. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker says he's going to start sending out layoff notices today to state workers. That's if he can't get at least one Democratic senator back at the statehouse to vote on a budget bill that'll shred public employee union members of their collective bargaining rights.
Oil prices are hovering just under $103 a barrel in futures trading today. And now lawmakers are back on the bandwagon about opening up the U.S. Strategic Oil Reserve. For more numbers, stocks here in the U.S. and others, check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org. You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, March 4th. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Time now for the global perspective. What's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world? Greece's Prime Minister George Papandreou today said his country could end up asking for yet another bailout. The country is still in severe debt, despite the fact it's cut the budget, including public pay and pensions to the bone. And yet, inside Greece, people aren't taking to the streets or trying to oust any government. they're quietly refusing to pay road tolls and other fees. From Athens, Joanna Kakissis reports.
There's always a siren going off at the Efidnes toll booth just outside of Athens. That's because some of the gates at the toll stations here are disabled, so people can go through without paying. The We Won't Pay movement began in Efidnes, a village of 3,000 people. The people who live here say they were tired of paying more than $4,000 in road tolls every year to go to work in Athens. Every weekend, a group from the village comes to the toll station to protest. Ioannis Germanos is one of the protesters. He says they lift the gates to send a message to the government.
On this Sunday, all the people from the village come here for a couple of hours. We, let's say, conquer the place for 2 hours.
The We Won't Pay movement in Greece now has more than 10,000 registered members. But the government says not paying fees and taxes will starve Greece of money it desperately needs to get out of debt. From Athens, I'm Joanna Kakissis from Marketplace.
The NBA will make history tonight when the Toronto Raptors and New Jersey Nets play the first ever regular season game in Europe. The league has played exhibition games all over the world, but this will be the first game played globally that'll count. The BBC's Alex Capstick reports the league has big plans for Europe.
The two NBA teams playing in London this weekend are already aware of the need to spread their brand globally. The Toronto Raptors have 6 international players on their roster, while the New Jersey Nets are owned by a famed Russian billionaire. Basketball is already the second most popular sport in some European countries like Spain, Greece and Turkey. Avery Johnson is the coach of the New Jersey Nets. He says some of his players have complained about the long journey, but Johnson says they'll have to get used to it.
We've gone to China already in the preseason. We've gone to Russia. So it's a part of who we are. And it's also a part of the ever-changing culture of the NBA.
In fact, the NBA says its long-term aim is to create a team in Europe, and expanding into Europe would help the bottom line. The Nets and Raptors are both struggling to win games this season, so when they play each other back home, few fans attend. But both games in London are already sold out. I'm the BBC's Alex Capstick for Marketplace.
Well, there are some really tall Ferris wheels in a few places around the world. Singapore, Bob, has the tallest at 541 feet. My gosh. Second tallest is in China. A developer here in the U.S. wants to build the third tallest Ferris wheel in Las Vegas, slapping a 500-foot ride at the southern end of the Las Vegas Strip.
Wait a minute. I thought they were like not trying to appeal to kids anymore.
Well, they're trying to appeal to everybody in Las Vegas. Get them in. So you'll be able to go up and down on the Strip in that Ferris wheel in 2 minutes flat, just like your bank balance after a trip to one of those casinos.
It sounds familiar.
What does Tier 1 Capital have in common with a wedding cake? Visit the Marketplace whiteboard to find out. Our videos demystify finance and economics. Just go to our website, marketplace.org.
You're listening to the Midday Update. Happy Friday. It's March 4th. I'm Steve Chiotakis, also known as Radio Chio on Twitter.
And I'm Bob Moon. Solar power is amping up its popularity in neighborhoods across the country, but it's not sales necessarily. The fastest growing part of the business is in leasing solar panels to homeowners instead of selling them. Solar lease companies expect to double their business this year. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro reports.
In the backyard of Mike Jones' suburban home in West Hills, California, you see citrus trees, a swing set, and
22 solar panels on the south side of our house.
They've been turned on about 5 months. When the sun's shining, Jones' utility meter sometimes points backwards.
Now we're generating more than we're using.
But he can't sell that power to the grid because the system belongs to a company called Sungevity.
There's no way we could have afforded it without going through the lease method.
The panels would have cost about $14,000. With a lease, Sungevity hooked up the panels, maintains them, and owns the power. It cost Jones about $4,000 for a 20-year lease to use that solar power, about 55 cents a day.
Unbelievable, really. It took me 3 or 4 days to get a hold of that, and I did all kinds of research. I thought it might have been a scam.
But so far, he says it's a great deal. He's still hooked up to the grid, but the panels lower his power bill to a few dollars a month. Sungevity founder Danny Kennedy says his company aims to make residential solar ubiquitous. The internet is a key factor. Homeowners enter their address at sungevity.com. An engineer evaluates their roof online.
So here you see your house, and where we would put the panels.
Within 24 hours, potential customers get a price quote by email. No on-site evaluation needed.
We want to be the Amazon of solar, if you like, or the Netflix or the iTunes.
Phone reps seal the deal after customers get their online quote and celebrate with maracas. And some investors are getting the tax credits and rebates for that. Solar lease customers sign over any incentives to the leasing company's investors. That's how the companies attract capital. So much so that Sungevity and other solar lease outfits are now expanding to the East Coast, where even with less sun, they plan to make solar shine. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
This week, Facebook sent a letter to a couple of powerful congressmen, Democrat Ed Markey and Republican Joe Barton, telling them the social network's plans for sharing user information, such as phone numbers, with third-party apps, advertisers, is still a go. But privacy groups and some lawmakers continue to cry foul. Marketplace Tech Report host John Moe is with us to begin a regular feature we're going to do every couple of weeks. Good morning, John.
Hey, Steve.
So Facebook says it's going to share my phone number with advertisers? How's that going to work?
It would work if you gave it permission to do so. It wouldn't happen automatically. But it's one of these things where if you want to play one of these games on Facebook, take a quiz to see which Battlestar Galactica character you are, those apps could ask you for that data in order to work. And this feature was actually active briefly in mid-January, and it caused a big stink, so Facebook yanked it. And now they're working on making that permission more clear before you give it.
It sounds like a breach of privacy, though, John. Am I wrong about that?
You know, you volunteer the information. You are giving it over willfully. The question is, will they be saying, hey, play this awesome game in huge type, but then give us all your data in tiny type, and whether or not that's deceptive?
You think people can get confused by this and maybe give them the information and not really know it?
That's really what it comes down to, is, you know, how clear those practices are. And the lawmakers are also concerned about kids. You know, you can join Facebook at a very early age, you know, age 13. So it's a question of, do people know what they're sharing before they go ahead and share it?
And is there something sinister about this, do you think, John? Or is this just another, you know, way to scrutinize Facebook's privacy policy?
You know, I think it's kind of more innocent than most Facebook policies and also more dangerous at the same time, because you do opt in. The dangerous part is that more of your data is being collected. And it's not just your phone number and your address that you got to think about. It's those things being associated with the rest of your profile that those app developers can sell, because the companies they sell it to can then come to me and pitch me things that I like, Seattle Mariners merchandise and Halo games, you know, stuff that I'm into. Maybe for you that's valuable. Maybe somebody really wants that. I really don't. But more than anything, Steve, it's a sign of the responsibility that comes with Facebook. It's an incredibly powerful tool. But as Spider-Man teaches us, Steve, with great power comes great responsibility.
Marketplace Tech Report host John Moe. John, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Hey, Steve, get your motor running.
Ah, okay.
It's now legal to buy and sell motorcycles on a Sunday in New Jersey.
That is awesome.
The state's governor just signed the change into law. It was passed after a cycle shop complained about losing customers to stores across the border in Pennsylvania and Delaware on Sundays. Now, it's still never on Sunday in Bergen County across the Hudson from New York City. Hmm. Blue laws in that part of Jersey still prohibit selling most non-essential items on a Sunday. But hey, you got to admit, this is a pretty bold move everywhere else in New Jersey.
Born to be wild.
Oh, but wait. I see here that, like a dozen other states, New Jersey still doesn't allow auto sales on Sundays. Don't ask me why. Motorcycles are now a different matter.
Maybe it's just two-wheeled.
It must be.
It's
something
two-wheeled.
Like that.
There's a lot of wheeling and dealing. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bob Moon. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.